OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky and this show is for Parshat Mas'eh. Matot and Mas'eh are most often combined. This year they are read separately. We read Matot last week, this week is Mas'eh. First broadcast and recording of course is Thursday, the 28th of Tammuz, 5768, July 31st. Now, July ends with today. Tammuz has one more day tomorrow. Rosh Chodesh is Shabbat. And that means that will already be August 2nd. That means August is one day ahead of the month of Av. And that means, since the month of Av has 30 days, and the month of August has 31 days, they will catch up with each other in time for Monday, the 1st of Elul, which will be the 1st of September. Jewish month and secular month synchronize in days of the month approximately every 2.5 years. There are fluctuations because of the February situation and the variables in the Jewish calendar. But it's fun. I checked on September and Elul. They matched back in 1905, then again in 1943, in 1989, and in the year 2000, 2008, this year. And that's pretty good, a distance of a separation of only 8 years, compare the other ones. The next time it will happen, or scheduled to be happen, is 2019, then 2038, and then 2084. Of course, from this point onward, into the future, the bets are off when we reestablish a Sanhedrin that will sanctify the months according to eyewitness testimony rather than the fixed calendar, then the synchronization will vary. But that's roughly the story. When I said 2.5 years, I didn't mean for September specifically. I meant for any month to match up. And there are situations, we had one a couple of years ago, where 2 months in a row the dates are matched, and sometimes there's a month, skip a month, and then another month. But these are the fun parts and the trivial parts of the comparison of the Jewish calendar to the Gregorian general calendar. To review the important parts, recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday of the week of Parshat Mas'eh. Rosh Chodesh is Shabbat as well. Today is the 28th of Tammuz, the 31st of July. And if the rest interests you, I'm glad you listened to it. And if not, it's behind us at this point. Psalm 130, Tehillim, Kuf Lamed. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shima V'Koli, Tehiena Oznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imecha hasalicha lama'an tivarei, ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi, velidvaro hocholti, nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker, yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, viyotziem mitzara lirvacha, umeafela laora, umishibud lugu'ula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, vinomar amen. Because we are in the 3 weeks mourning period for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the music is a cappella only and appropriate songs only. A cappella, meaning vocal, no instrumentation, seems to be a halachic opinion which most authorities follow, that musical instrumentation is what they forbid during this period of time, but not voice. And specifically, I personally don't care for the a cappella albums that have very happy songs, but when I find A, an a cappella album, and B, one with appropriate songs for this time, I go for it. Last week I played a couple of them. I would like to play another song now from that Noam Productions album made specifically for the 3 weeks in Sfirat HaOmer. Side point, they came out with the exact same album with musical instrumentation for the rest of the year. And maybe after Tisha B'Av, I'll play one of those just to give you the contrast. But this particular song, as many of the songs that I choose to play on Torah Tidbits Audio, is also a prayer. In fact, this comes from a prayer, one that not everybody says, but it is the introduction to the putting on of one's talit in the morning. And among other things it says, through the commandment of tzitzit, may my life force, spirit, soul, and prayer be rescued from the external forces. May the talit spread its wings over them and rescue them like an eagle rousing his nest, fluttering over his eaglets. That expression, Kenesher Ya'ir Kino, is borrowed from the Torah, Parshat Ha'azinu, Kinesher Ya'ir Kino Al Gozalav Yerachef, Yefros Kinafav Yikachehu Yisaehu Alev Rato, Hashem Badad Yanchenu Ve'ein Imo El Nechar. The translation of that, this is only the verse that the words come from, is, as an eagle stirs up its nest, flutters over its young, spreads out its wings, takes them, bears them on its pinions, so God alone did lead him, and there were no strange gods with him. Although, as I said, the prayer is composed for putting on the talit, we can generalize it, broaden our prayer to God, that he rescue my life force, my spirit, my soul, and my prayer from external forces, and may he spread his wings over them and rescue them like an eagle rousing his nest, fluttering over his eaglets. would like now to present the theme of the lead tidbit from the hard copy of Torah Tidbits, available in print, on the internet, by email, and in a different form on this radio show, Torah Tidbits Audio. It starts with a very interesting trivial fact. The only weekly portion that contains a specific date that is read on that day happens to be Parshat Maaseh, when we read it on Rosh Chodesh Av. The date in question is the anniversary of the death of Aharon HaKohen. What I have always found remarkable is that back in Parshat Chukat, when we were told of Aharon's death, and it was described how Moshe Rabbeinu took his brother Aharon, Aharon's son Elazar, they ascended the mountain called Hor Hahar, and there Aharon removed his special garments of the Kohuna and transmitted them to Elazar, who took his place as leader side by side with Moshe Rabbeinu. Then they came down the mountain. The people realized that Aharon had died, and they cried, and they mourned, and they grieved. And the Torah continues whatever happened there. The date is not mentioned back in Parshat Chukat. In Parshat Maaseh, you have a travelogue, a description of the travels of the people from the day they left Egypt until they arrived at the threshold of the land of Israel. It describes 42 different places of encampment. That includes the place they left from, Ramesses. And there is very little material detail about the places of encampment. Most have no detail at all. One or two of them have a little bit of detail. The only location that has any considerable detail here in Maaseh is Hor Hahar, that place where the Torah tells us, Vayis'u mikadesh, they traveled from the place called Kadesh, Vayachanu, and they camped Behor Hahar, Bikseh Eretz Edom. They camped on Hor Hahar, or at Hor Hahar, at the edge of the Edomite territory. Vaya'al Aharon HaKohen el Hor Hahar al Pi Hashem. Aharon ascended Hor Hahar at God's instruction. Vayamat Sham, and he died there. Bishnat Ha'arba'im Litzait B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, in the 40th year following the Exodus. Bachodesh HaChamishi, in the 5th month, count them, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av. Be'echod Lachodesh, on the 1st of the month. V'Aharon ben Shalosh Ve'esrim Ve'umat Shana B'moto B'hor Hahar. Aharon was 123 years old when he died on Hor Hahar. One further verse, the Kena'ani Melech Arad that was in the Negev heard that this happened and Israel was approaching. And then it continues. They traveled from Hor Hahar and they came to Tzalmona. They traveled from Tzalmona and they went to Funon, etc., etc., etc. No detail anywhere near what it has for Hor Hahar on any of the other travel places. And here, when it recounts the death of Aharon, it mentions the day that it happened. And we happen to be reading it this coming Shabbat, on that very day, the 3,320th, shouldn't say it like that, the 3,320th Yortzeit, anniversary of the death of Aharon HaKohen. It's a remarkable piece of trivia, and I don't know what it means, except that I feel very strongly that it's calling our attention to Parshat Maaseh and Rosh Chodesh Av, simultaneously overlaid one on top of the other as transparencies, where you see one in perspective of the other, which leads me to my point. Now, let me also say that in any other year aside from these relatively rare ones when Rosh Chodesh Av is Shabbat, Maaseh is not far away. It's either a day before, a day after, a couple of days, but it's hovering around the first of Av. And because, A, the Torah didn't tell us back when it happened, only when it recounts it here. B, the Torah doesn't give us details of any of the other locations, except for this one, anything to speak of. I believe it's calling our attention to this coincidence of the calendar and the cycle of the Torah reading. And here is what I believe it is. And I've discussed this in different contexts. It's not a new idea, but I think it bears repeating and focusing. Parshat Maaseh. We are standing, the people of Israel are on the border of the land of Israel, just on the other side of the Jordan River, about ready to cross. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher, recounts the process that brought us to this point. We left Egypt, we went to here, we went to there, we crossed the sea, we went here, there, a long list of places. And now we are on the plains of Moab on the other side of the Jordan River. That's good. The Torah continues by describing the boundaries for the people of Israel in the land of Israel. God says to Moshe, saying, Tzavet b'nei Yisrael v'yomarta alehem, command the people and tell them, Ki atem ba'im el ha'aretz Kena'an, they are arriving soon in the land of Kena'an, Zot ha'aretz, this is the land, Asher tipol lochem b'nachala, Eretz Kena'an l'gvuloteha. This is the land which is coming to you, the people of Israel, as an inheritance and a heritage, according to its boundaries. And then continues the Psukim, describing the boundaries of the land of Israel. And by the way, it goes from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean without any other nation being part of that. This all belongs to the Jewish people. Side point, not only does the Torah tell us this, but the Palestine mandate of the League of Nations, Lahavdil, tells us the same thing. A Jewish homeland from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean, and we won't go into the details of the rest of the border. The point is, we are arrived at the land of Israel. We are commanded and told this is the land which we will inhabit and live in and have as our own. Its borders are described. Then God says to Moshe, these are the names of the people who will take care of the distribution of the land after conquest. And it mentions Elazar HaKohen and Yehoshua bin Nun as the individuals who are in charge and who lead the people, and then it mentions the leaders of each of the tribes. Notable among them, Kalev ben Yefuneh, the partner spy with Yehoshua, who are the ones who encourage people to go, and those are the only two adult males that survive the 40 years of wandering, and the various leaders of the other tribes. We're getting there. We're very close. Now, actually, I skipped over a couple of verses which are very important, and I want to go back to them. Right after the whole travelogue, God says to Moshe, in Arvot Moav, on the plains of Moav, Al Yarden Yericho, Lemor, on the Jordan River, opposite the city of Yericho, Jericho, which is in the land. Daberol b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta lehem, speak to the people and tell them, Ki atem ovrim et hayarden el eretz Kena'an, you are going into the land of Kena'an. V'horashtem et kol yoshvei ha'aretz mipneichem, you will conquer it from all of the inhabitants therein, and you will destroy all of their idolatry and paganism from the land. V'horashtem et ha'aretz v'shavtem ba, and you will acquire the land and dwell in it. This is the mitzvah to live in the land of Israel. And according to Ramban, it's one of the 613 mitzvot that applies not only to that generation who was commanded, but to all Jews in perpetuity. I'll say it again. V'horashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem bah. Ki lachem natati et ha'aretz l'reshet otah. Because it is to you that I, says God, have given this land to inherit. V'hitnachaltem et ha'aretz b'goral l'mishpachotehem. You will settle, pardon the expression, the land according to divine lottery, according to the families. And basically, you are commanded to do this. This is not a choice. Would you like to go across the Jordan? And would you like to conquer the land and divide it up? No, you must do this. This is a command to the Jewish people. This is the reason that God took us out of Egypt. He said it back at the burning bush, the first prophecy to Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the purpose of your existence. You are a Jewish people so that God could take you out of Egypt and bring you to Eretz Yisrael.
I'm Rod Sterling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
Okay, I was describing until now Parshat Maaseh, bringing us from Egypt to the land of Israel, describing what's coming now across the Jordan, and the great mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Picture that the Jewish people are standing before a door, and our guide, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our leader, is describing what's on the other side of the door. He's not going in there. Yehoshua and Elazar ben Aaron, HaKohen, are going to take the people through that door. But that's where they're going. And we have just, again, in Parshat Maaseh, seen the description of what's on the other side of that door. But now we glance slightly to the left. And there is another door there. Right next to this one, we almost didn't notice it. And we say, what's that door? Ah, that door is Rosh Chodesh Av, the first day of the month of Av. What do you mean, that door is Rosh Chodesh Av? Well, can't you see? That's what it says on the door, but I'll tell you a little bit about that door. The Mishnah says, Misha nichnas av mima'atim besimcha. When the month of enters, our joy diminishes. Why is that so? Because of the calamities that are associated with the month of, specifically with the ninth of, also known as Tisha B'Av. What are those calamities according to the Mishnah? The first one is, it is the date of the decree against the generation of the wilderness that they will wander around for 40 years and die out in the course of that time. We're talking about the adult male population. And only their children will be privileged to go through that other door. But they will die out. Why was that decree pronounced on that generation? Because of the sin of the spies. It actually started with the sin of the golden calf, and the many other times the people irked God and angered him, but we'll condense it all into the sin of the spies. The sin of the spies can be summed up in our context of Maaseh, and specifically in the way that I just described Parshat Maaseh, as standing in front of the door that leads to the land of Israel, where the sin of the spies said, I don't want to go through that door. I want to go back to Egypt, or I want to stay here on this side of the door, and live a life here, but I don't want to go there. It's too dangerous, and the people will eat there, and the land will eat its inhabitants, and they're too mighty, and they won't. We won't be able to prevail. Kalev and Yehoshua were encouraging the people to go through that door. This is 40 years, almost, 39, before Parshat Maaseh takes place. And because of that, a generation died out, and a new generation is poised at that door that is described in Parshat Maaseh. But that other door, the one that says Rosh Chodesh Av, is there also with a sign over it, Mishenichnas Av Mima'atim B'Simcha. And it's not just the sin of the spies, but it's also the destruction of the first temple and the exile from the land of Israel following the destruction of the first temple, and it is the destruction of the second temple and the exile that followed it, which has lasted close to 2,000 years. That's what that other door represents. That's what Rosh Chodesh Av reminds us of. And that's the choice that the Jew as an individual and the Jewish people as a nation have to make today. I'm not talking about 3,320 years ago. I'm talking about today. 5768, 2008, according to the secular calendar, the Jews that are alive today. Will they go through the Parshat Maaseh door into Israel, live there, recognize that that is their home, build it into a Torah society like it should be, and thrive there, and be protected from their enemies, and withstand any other pressures, or will they again go through that Rosh Chodesh Av door? And it's not enough really to mention the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash or the destruction of the second or the exiles that followed without mentioning the cause of those destructions. Our turning of our back to God is the simple summary of what went wrong during the first temple period. It included idolatry and many, many other things which in essence are rejecting God. And as a result, we were spit out of this land and thrust into exile. The second Beit HaMikdash, the second temple, started off on a very shaky basis in the first place. And that was because not all the Jews returned from Babylonia to build that second Beit HaMikdash. Being on shaky grounds, it lasted plenty long, and yet it fell again. For a variety of reasons, but if we needed to sum it up, we can say we turned our backs on each other. And without going into all of the details of Sinat Chinam and other things that were related to the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, the simplified summary is we turned our backs on God, we turned our backs on each other, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. It started earlier when we were a young nation and we turned our backs on God's promise to bring us into the land and take care of us here. So that is the Rosh Chodesh Av message. Because Rosh Chodesh Av is mentioned in Parshat Maaseh, we are acutely aware of these two simultaneous, whatever you want to call them. I wish I had a nice word for them. And it puts us at a fork in the road, at a crossroads. I said before, two doors. If I'm mixing metaphors, you'll have to forgive me for it. But it all amounts to the same thing. Where to from here? We have to also remember the prophecy of Zechariah HaNavi, who said that there will come a time where the days of Tisha B'Av and Shivasar B'Tammuz, the 10th of Tevet and Tzom Gedalia, the four fast days related to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, where these fast days will become festive days. in the building of the third Beit HaMikdash. That is the potential that is spelled out in Parshat Maaseh, and that is the negative potential, not to realize that immediately, by the basic reminders of the month of Av. And the choice, as I've always mentioned, is ours. We have an agenda, we have a plan, and that plan has its good points and its hitches, and the people who try to follow it and the people who don't try to follow it. And it is an ongoing thing throughout Jewish history where the ability to enter into the Messianic era is ours. We have to make things ready for the Mashiach, and then he comes. That's the way I understand it and believe it. Let me go back a step to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah to live in Israel. And I know that there are those who argue whether it's an active mitzvah today, or a different type, or a concept, or doesn't apply in our time. But the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, is God wants the Jewish people to be in the land of Israel. You work towards that goal, or you work against that goal. And the whole point of this show, of my life, of Arut Sheva, of the OU, is supposed to be the working towards that goal of increasing Torah observance and Torah study and Torah values among the Jewish people, and a conscious awareness of the role that Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, has in the whole picture. In Ramban's writing, Nachmanides' writings on this mitzvah, he has an interesting additional facet to it. V'horashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem bah, you shall settle in the land and live there, is a command which has a negative flip side. The command is, it is the land of Israel which you are commanded to live in. The flip side is, you were not commanded, you were uncommanded, you were not commanded to live elsewhere and have that same grip on the land and sink your roots into it. What I'm trying to say is that if people are exiled to a land, that's one thing. If a person is thrown into jail, that's the same one thing. What he does is thrive the best, or survive, slash thrive the best he can in prison, hoping for the day when he will be able to get out of prison and return to a normal, fulfilling life. When the Jew was exiled, he had to make do with the best that he could. What he should not have done is dug in his roots into Babylonia, dug in his roots into Vilna, dug in his roots into Borough Park, or any place in the world, and say, this is my home now. No. This is my temporary place of residence, and I will try to have the best kind of Jewish life I can for myself, my family, and my people here. But this is not the goal. The goal is not to live in Teaneck, New Jersey. The goal is to live in the land of Israel. I don't know if I could put it any simpler than that. And the alarming thing is, when a Jew not just doesn't come to live in Israel, I'll tell you that every plane load of Nefesh B'Nefesh Olim warms our hearts, brings tears of joy to our eyes, because we see more Jews coming to live in Israel. But not everybody is coming. All right. But what's the attitude of the people that are not coming? What is the attitude of the Jew who lives anywhere else in the world? Is it, look at what we have created here in our community? I say this all the time. I'm almost getting tired of hearing myself say it. I can imagine how some of the listeners feel. But it's a message that has to be hammered home. If you are a Jew living in a Jewish community, a thriving Jewish community outside of Israel, that is wonderful what your community has been able to accomplish under the circumstances in which it found itself. But wake up. Realize that the prison sentence of exile need not continue. You are free to come and live where God originally and ultimately and all the way through wants you to be. And therefore, the one thing that I'm saying now that you shouldn't be doing is settling and conquering and taking as your own the land in which you live. This is the place that you do that, not elsewhere. Let's listen to part of another track of that album that I played from before. This one is Al Naharot Bavel by the Waters of Babylon. Sham Yashavnu V'gam Bachinu, there we sat and also cried. Bizachrenu, when we remembered Zion. Remember that we are not locked into Babylonian exile anymore. Wherever you live now, if it's outside of Israel, it is not a prison for you. If, by the way, you are imprisoned, I mean actual prison, or I mean, you know, more figuratively in the country in which you live, then you still have to strive to get out of that situation. But I'm talking about the open, welcoming places in the world where Jews choose to live. Choose to live. You're still going to sing Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu Bizachrenu Etzion, but know that it's not enough to wistfully remember Zion when you can live in Zion. There's an apocryphal story they tell at a Seder table of a group of people who were singing Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim HaBenuya, next year and rebuilt Jerusalem, and everybody was happy, and the woman of the house started to cry. Her husband asked her why she crying, and she says, we're singing next year in Jerusalem, but I don't want to be there. I like it here. I like my home. I like my friends. I like the environment here. And it makes me sad to think of next year in Jerusalem. To which the answer was, don't let it bother you. It's only a song. It isn't only a song. It is a hope, a dream, and an aspiration, and one that is accessible.
Yeah.
Let me finish with, I guess, another observation or maybe a clarification. The mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is an individual mitzvah and a communal mitzvah. Now, I've spoken till now, I think, about the individual part of the mitzvah. Each individual Jew is commanded to keep the Shabbat, to keep kosher, to pray every day, to say Birkat HaMazon after a meal, to take a lulav and etrog on Sukkot, to hear shofar, to put on tefillin, to circumcise, to eat matzah, etc., 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 and to live in Israel. Almost period. You want to make a semicolon? We'll make a semicolon. But that's the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And you could argue for another time, not for now. Maybe the communal side of mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael points to another part of the Ramban's description of the mitzvah. I refer specifically to his including in the description of this mitzvah not to leave any part of Eretz Yisrael uninhabited and not to give it over into the hands of other nations. Now, it sounds like some creation from a religious Zionist organization to back up the claims that we are making vis-a-vis the situation of our own time. But it's not. It's the Ramban, and it's older than that, and it's the communal side, because an individual, well, certainly we'll say that it has an individual side, where an individual who owns land in Israel would not be allowed to sell it to a non-Jew. But it's more than that. It's the Jewish people in the land of Israel and everywhere else that they are required to settle the land, to live in all of its parts, and not to allow a situation which gives over part of this land to other people. Well, if you want to have peace with your neighbors, you're going to have to make serious, painful concessions. I am so tired of hearing that expression. We don't have to make painful concessions. This is our land, and if our government were to say to the world, this is our land by biblical right, by, again, Lahavdil, by international law, and don't you tell me what I have to give away in order to stop enemy attacks, we will handle that also the way it should be handled. That would be something to see. That would already be the introduction of Mashiach's time. The Arabs who live in Gaza, if they want to live peacefully, side by side, with economic cooperation from the Jews in Israel, that would be nice. They want their own state, not here. They want to fight against us, not here, and we should do everything within our power to stop it, even if the world won't necessarily be happy with us. They'll learn. We have to teach them. I guess I'll have to say on that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, and try to take a lot of the things that I said as food for thought. Take it to your heart, to your minds, and work on it. Let me know. Lehishtameah.